This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever we may live upon the earth. And certainly the ideas we represent are important to all people, especially now at this juncture in history. At this juncture in current events, the current events that are seemingly making perhaps a chapter of some of the bloodiest history of the world. Because every day it seems that we reach more and more toward this clash of civilizations which the neocons such as Wormser and Feith, Pearl, Wolfowitz, Crystal, Abrams, Libby, this clash of civilizations, this World War IV that they advocate, comes closer to us every day as America is making more and more war declarations against Iran. The popularly elected, by the way, democratic nation of Iran, a nation that has leadership truly in the will of the people. And I don't think that America today truly has leadership that's in our will. Most of Americans don't want massive immigration, yet we've had it for decades. Yet decades, most Americans have opposed it. America, of course, has had forced integration of education, forced busing for decades, yet most of Americans have opposed it. Americans have had many other aspects of a regime over us, over our media, over our government that has gone against the will and the wishes of the American people in so many ways. And today, at least 2/3 of the American people are opposed to the war in Iran and believe George Bush is running it poorly. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we shouldn't even be in this war. This war is a great disaster for the American people. I have a great article which I quote from and I give you a good link to in DavidDuke.com, which is available for everyone listening to this broadcast. It's on DavidDuke.com, and I hope some of my listeners will go ahead and format it and post it on Stormfront in a number of places as well. The name of the article is Neocon Advocates Civil War in Iraq, a Strategic Policy. As my listeners and readers know, I've been saying for quite a while that Israel and the Jewish neocons want to destabilize Iraq, even if it harms American objectives there, and even if it furthers terrorism against Americans around the world. The Zionists don't want a pro-Iran united Iraqi regime to emerge from the occupation, for that runs counter to the Israeli strategic interests in the region. At the same time, increased terrorism against America and the West, emanating from a destabilized Iraq, will continue to create a climate where Israel will be supported as a, quote, anti-terrorist ally. In Lebanon, Israel did everything it could to foment civil war between Christians and Muslims, even going so far as to facilitate the Sabra and Shatila massacre of over 1,200 Palestinians. Now, the politicians who will be saying that we must stand with Israel because Israel as an ally in the anti-terrorist war. They never seem to mention the fact that it's because of the Israeli manipulation of our foreign policy that Americans have faced these terrorist attacks, such as what happened on 9/11. We have supported the criminal regime of Israel and their dispossession, torture, murder, and suppression of millions of Palestinian people, and their brutal military occupation over the last almost 40 years. That's why America is facing this terrorism. If Israel is our only friend, the reason she is because before Israel, we had no enemies in the Mideast. And of course, America needs the oil and resources of the Middle East very, very much. It's crucial for our economy, not only for America, but also for Europe, and indeed Asia, and most of the world. Now, I suspect that Israel's Mossad was behind the recent bombing of one of the holiest sites in Iraq, the Askaria Shrine. And I suspect that Israel is doing everything it can to engender sectarian strife in Iraq. We know this for a fact by looking at the historical record. Israel was notorious in supporting the terrible civil war between the Christians and the Muslims in Lebanon. And they wanted that civil war because it weakened their enemy. Israel does not want a united opponent, and they certainly don't want a refurbished Iraq with American arms now and support and economic advances. They certainly don't want this state to be unified and strong and be against Israel. Democracy in all these nations obviously produces an anti-Israeli and, frankly, an anti-American climate in these regions because of the American support, again, for the Israeli criminal state, the Israeli terrorist state. I know you don't hear about Israel as a terrorist state in our media. They don't, you know, they label Hamas as a terrorist organization, or Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. They don't label Ariel Sharon as a terrorist, yet he is a mass murderer who should certainly be before the world court for his crimes. They don't brand Israel as a terrorist state, even though it was created, in fact, by massive terror, which drove out the Palestinians. And I want to talk a little bit about how, later in this broadcast, about how media and how basically the Jewish extremist influence in media and government around the world is preventing us from getting a true picture of this. If the media always refers to the Palestinians as terrorists or Hamas as terrorists and Israel as, you know, the peaceful state of Israel, it's no wonder that people will have a perverted and a twisted view of what's happening in that region of the world. Now, I found a recent article in Counterpunch, which is an interesting publication. In fact, it's an anti-David Duke publication. They ran a story a while back about how I really wasn't a doctor. This is before I received my legitimate doctorate after defending my thesis at the university where I studied in Kyiv, Ukraine. But anyway, I don't know what they're going to say about that now. So this site's not exactly pro-me. It's a very liberal site. But they have stood up pretty strongly against Jewish supremacism and against the criminal actions of Israel, and certainly in opposition to the American foreign policy, which has harmed our country. So I won't take personal what they've said about me. I will share their good information with you. I've got a very thick skin, ladies and gentlemen. I believe in going after the cheese. And to me, the cheese is exposing the truth about the Jewish supremacists that are not only washing this world in blood in the Middle East and elsewhere with their Clash of Civilizations programs, but they're also the primary architects of the dissolution of America by opening up our borders, and they've been behind just about every nefarious scheme to destroy European-American mankind. Now, that may sound radical to some of you listening, but I don't think they're just trying to destroy our brand, our variety of mankind. I think they're trying to destroy every variety of mankind and every sort of solidarity around the world. Here's the article I found. It's called Neocon Advocates Civil War in Iraq, a Strategic Policy. Daniel Pipes finds comfort in Muslims killing Muslims. Here's the quote from the article. One of the abiding myths about the war on Iraq is that the neocons were too stupid to realize that they would confront an unrelenting indigenous resistance to the occupation of Iraq. Unwittingly, the storyline goes, they led the U.S. into a conflict which has now produced a civil war, but this simply does not fit the facts. The neocons clearly anticipated such an outcome before they launched their war, as Stephen Zunes documents in Antiwar.com. And here's his quotation. Top analysts in the CIA and State Department, as well as large numbers of Middle East experts, warn that the U.S. invasion of Iraq could result in a violent ethnic and sectarian conflict. Even some of the war's intellectual architects acknowledged as much. In a 1997 paper, prior to becoming major figures in the Bush foreign policy team, David Wormser, Richard Perl, and Douglas Feith predicted that a post-Saddam Iraq would likely be ripped apart, and that's in quotations, by sectarianism and other cleavages, but called on the United States to expedite such a collapse anyway. Yet the line persists that the neocons had no idea what they were getting into. This is back to Mr. John Walsh. This cannot be correct, as they think a lot about what they do and they plan carefully. Not only is that charge absurd in the face of it, but it's ignorant on the part of those who level it, and it is the worst political mistake possible, underestimating your adversary. Now the neocons are beginning to advocate for civil war in Iraq quite openly. The clearest statement of the strategy as yet comes from preeminent neocon and ardent Zionist Daniel Pipes. In a recent piece in the Jerusalem Post, Pipes spills the beans. He writes, and before I quote this, I must remind you that Daniel Pipes is the Jewish neocon extremist who is very close friends with Fleming Rose, the Danish, and I'll put that word in quotes, man of Jewish descent who did the Muhammad cartoons in the Danish newspaper that caused so much unrest and violence between Muslims and Christians and Muslim nations and Western nations. And here's the quote that Pipes has written in the Jerusalem Post. Quote, the bombing on February 22nd of the Askaria Shrine in Samarra, Iraq, was a tragedy. But it was not an American or a coalition tragedy. Iraq's plight is neither a coalition responsibility nor a particular danger to the West. Fixing Iraq is neither the coalition's responsibility nor its burden. When Sunni terrorists target Shiites and vice versa, non-Muslims are less likely to be hurt. Civil war in Iraq, in short, would be a humanitarian tragedy, but not a strategic one. Unquote. As ever, Pipe's anti-Arab racism is simply too rabid to be hidden. If Muslims are busy killing other Muslims, then non-Muslims are less likely to be hurt? What does that say about Muslim lives? And of course, both Sunnis and Shia must be labeled, quote, terrorists. Again, the rationale, the language used by the neocons and reflected by the inordinate Jewish extremist influence in our media is not an accident. Pipes is doing, that's my words, by the way, that last sentence and not Mr. Walsh's. Pipes is doing more endorsing than the doing nothing more than endorsing the oldest of colonial strategies, divide et impera. Pipes envisions other benefits to the Civil War strategy, such as inhibiting the spread of democracy in the Middle East. Pipes again says this, and here's a quote, Civil War will, quote, terminate the dream of Iraq serving as a model for other Middle Eastern countries, thus delaying the push toward elections. This would have the effect of keeping Islamists from being legitimated by the popular vote, as Hamas was just a month ago, unquote. Now I'm going to diverge a little bit from Mr. Walsh's story and make a comment about that issue. let's see, isn't that the new thrust of President Bush? And President Bush is being completely got by these so-called neocons. Isn't that what they've been selling the American people for the last 3 years after the country was occupied, that we must establish democracy, that we're bringing them democracy? That isn't that supposed to be the objective, and democracy is going to be friendly to the United States? Well, obviously, democracy will not be friendly to the United States of America, because the feeling on the street of these countries is much more anti-American than the policies of these set-upon governments, these government officials who have economic and other dealings with America and these other countries, and with even the Jewish state. Democracy. Here we have the truth coming out, that the neocons really aren't interested in democracy or freedom at all. They're interested in strategic policy, and their strategic policy is based strictly on Israel, because obviously it's not in the favor of America to have an Iraq full of civil war, especially while we have 140,000 troops there. And we have our men dying in this absolute conflagration that exists in that country. That's not in the American interest whatsoever. It's not in the American interest to have Iraq become a training ground and a source for terrorism around the world, which, of course, it has become now. There's a lot of terrorism now coming out of Iraq, just as what happened with the bombings in Jordan recently and other places around the world. This didn't happen under Saddam Hussein, but it's happening now, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I want you to read the rest of the article. You can find it at the link that I have on www.davidduke.com. Reading the article, I'm reminded of the neocon strategist Steven Steinlight, who was former head of the National Affairs Department for the American Jewish Committee. That's the largest Jewish organization in the United States. And I'm reminded what he wrote about Jewish strategy for dominating the policies of our United States, of America. And this is what he wrote, quote, "For perhaps another generation, an optimistic forecast, the Jewish community is thus in a position where it will be able to divide and conquer and enter into selective coalitions that support our agenda." Unquote. In the article, Steinlight also talks about the danger to Jewish power from American election reform. Real democracy is a danger to Jewish hegemony in elections where Jewish special interest money is disallowed. In truth, the Jewish extremists don't want real democracy in Iraq. They don't want real democracy in the Middle East. They don't want it in any nation, least of all in the United States of America. And that's precisely why their supporters in media and government in this establishment, which is so heavily weighted by these Jewish extremists, why they support this two-party system where there's, as George Wallace used to say, not a dime's worth of difference between them. Yes, they want to divide and conquer potential rival Iraq, regardless of the danger that this poses to America. Of course, they were the ones who thoroughly led the push for the Iraq war in the first place, a war that only serves Israel and only hurts the security, the economic and strategic interests of the United States. And ladies and gentlemen, it is our blood of our men and women who is being spilled upon the sands of Iraq. These Jewish extremists have also been the architects of opening the borders of Europe and America to the Third World and increasing multiculturalism. A divided nation that they can, as Steinlight points out, quote, divide and conquer. Read the article on Counterpunch. Go to my site, davidduke.com. Read the article and go to Counterpunch and read this article thoroughly. It will give you an insight into the dynamics of Jewish supremacism. Another issue that I want to talk about with you a little bit is the fact that there is increasing knowledge among many quarters around the world that these Jewish extremists are succeeding more and more in suppressing freedom of speech and press and thought around the world. Not just in the United States, where they have extraordinary power, but in Europe and Australia and elsewhere. Robert Fisk is a journalist who is very liberal, and I disagree with him on many subjects. I agree with him, basically, on his analysis of the Middle East. He's been a courageous journalist. He's put his life on the line, and he's gone where many other reporters are afraid to go. But he's dared to come out recently, and by the way, he's gone at great lengths to explain that he's not anti-Semitic, and great lengths to explain that he has different Jewish friends and associates and all the rest of it. But he's now beginning to come out more and more with the truth of the fact that some of these Jewish extremists are suppressing the truth. And in fact, they're suppressing even other Jews who take a different line about Israel. But again, these Jewish extremists, they know no bounds. And like Dr. Finkelstein, I should say, as he has said so eloquently, he said, you know, if I were not Jewish and not the son of Holocaust survivors, I'd probably be in prison right now for the things I've said about the extortion racket that's called the Holocaust industry. I'm going to quote a couple lines from Robert Fisk, Free Speech in Israel. And this is what he says. He first talks about an American that every American should be in awe of for her courage. She's truly an American heroine. And this is an American who was brutally murdered, clearly murdered by the Israelis, because she was standing up for the Palestinian people whose homes are being bulldozed and destroyed by the Israeli state. Here's a couple of quotes from it. You've got to fight. It's the only conclusion I can draw as I see the renewed erosion of our freedom to discuss the Middle East. The most recent example, and the most shameful, is the cowardly decision of the New York Theater Workshop to cancel the Royal Court's splendid production of My Name is Rachel Corrie. It's a story, in her own words and emails, of the brave young American woman who traveled to Gaza to protect innocent Palestinians and who stood in front of an Israeli bulldozer in an attempt to prevent the driver from destroying a Palestinian home. The bulldozer drove over her, then reversed and crushed her a second time. An American heroine, Rachel, earned no brownie points from the Bush administration, which bangs on about courage and freedom from oppression every few minutes. Rachel's was the wrong sort of courage, and she was defending the freedom of the wrong people. But when I read that James Nicola, in the New York Times Workshop's artistic director, his title really should be in quotation marks, had decided to postpone the play indefinitely because in our pre-production planning and our talking around and listening in our communities, and that's in New York, what we heard was that after Ariel Sharon's illness and the election of Hamas, we had a very edgy situation, quote unquote. And this is Fisk. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. So let's confront this tomfoolery. Down in Australia, my old mate Anthony Lowenstein, a journalist and academic, is having an equally vile time. He has completed a critical book on the Israel-Palestine conflict for Melbourne University's publishing, and Jewish communities in Australia are trying to have it censored out of existence before it appears in August. A one-off bit of skull drudgery on Israel's behalf. Alas, no. A letter arrived for me last week from Israeli-American Barbara Goldscheider, whose novel Nakba, The Catastrophe, The Palestinian-Israeli Conflict, that's just been published. She's been attacked, she told me, merely because she chose an Arabic title in my novel. Anyway, he goes on in his article, and I really suggest that you read this, and you can find this, by the way, on the Palestinian Chronicle page. It's palestinechronicle.com, www.palestinechronicle.com. Finally, Fisk says something at the end of the article which is very powerful. He talks, by the way, about how he had an article which was going to run in an Irish newspaper. And he talks about the Israeli literal extortion of people in Lebanon, where the people were being forced to pay for their military occupation by these Israeli troops, and how that they were murdering people, in fact, and they had witnesses to it. Well, at the last minute, even though the article he wrote about this ran many years ago, it couldn't be run again because of pressure. And this is what Fisk writes, and this paragraph says so much as to what's really going on in the world today. I better remember what I wrote in my newspaper just over 6 years ago, that, quote, the degree of abuse and outright threats now being directed at anyone who dares to criticize Israel is fast reaching McCarthyite proportions. The attempt to force the media to obey Israel's rules is international and growing, I should now add. And by the way, you know, McCarthy is the great, you know, the great kicking doll, the kicking dummy of the liberal media. But McCarthy basically was concerned about the incredible amount of communist intrusion and infiltration in terms of the American government and in terms of the media. He was concerned about the fact that 9 out of the 10 Hollywood producers, when asked if they were communists by American investigative committees of Congress, that they took the Fifth Amendment. Certainly, it was a concern, I would think, for Americans to be concerned that people who were communists were making the movies that America would watch. Of course, you know, they're really still there, ladies and gentlemen. A few people were blackballed, but let me tell you something. And we have changed. We have gone toward this neocon, which is really nothing more than a Trotskyite Marxism. We've gone to this kind of vision of life. We've got a liberal Marxist version, which is maybe even by people such as the people in Counterpunch to a point. And we have a conservative Marxist version in the people who are the neocons of America. But whether they're liberals or conservatives, we have a tendency that if they are in fact people aligned with the Jewish community, they tend to be completely in favor of the Jewish agenda, the Jewish strategic interest. And McCarthyism, even in its heyday, had many critics. So where are the critics we have today of this so-called new McCarthyism, which is done by the Jewish supremacists? McCarthy, after all, was viciously, there's a big movie, another Jewish production, a movie about Edward R. Murrow and his attacks and his relentless attack upon McCarthy. Walter Winchell made relentless attacks upon McCarthy. We can talk about many journalists. Many people spoke out. In fact, the media, in many ways in America, was anti-McCarthy more than it was pro-McCarthy. You can take a look at the New York Times during that period, and you can see exactly what I'm speaking about. And McCarthyism, of course, did not exist to any degree at all in Canada. It did not exist in Europe at the time. What we have in terms of this Jewish extremist effort to suppress freedom of speech and press is a worldwide effort. It goes on in Australia, as illustrated by this article. It goes on in Ireland. It goes on in France. It goes on in Britain. It goes on in Poland. It goes on in right now in Ukraine, where Israel's demanded that Ukraine not even allow the president of my university run for office. It goes on in Russia. It goes on all over the world. It goes on in Austria, with the pressure from the Simon Wiesenthal Institute to prosecute people who dare to challenge any aspect of the Holocaust. David Irving, an historian, is in prison now for 3 years. Ernst Sindel is facing 5 years or more in prison in Germany. And Gerhard Rudolph, a brilliant doctoral chemistry student who was just actually close to getting his doctoral degree, and he's become a criminal, and now he's in a high-security prison for simply offering scientific arguments that dispute some of the assertions of the Holocaust. We have Bruno Gollnisch in France, who's literally facing now a court case. He's been stripped of his European parliamentary immunity for doing what? Not for denying any aspect of the Holocaust, but for saying that experts need to discuss and debate this issue and that freedom of speech should be allowed on this issue. For simply arguing that freedom of speech should be allowed, he now faces a court case. This is beyond anything that took place in the McCarthy era. No one in the McCarthy era was jailed for simply saying that he agreed with the communist system. There were a few people jailed for lying on their applications to the American government under oath. there were a few people jailed for spying for the Soviet system. Nobody was jailed by McCarthy for simply having an opinion about an historical opinion, about a historical period. And there's been many apologists, you know, the communists, the Jewish-led Bolsheviks, and that's exactly what they were, because they were overwhelmingly Jewish-led in the early days of communism. They killed tens of millions of people. Tens of millions of people. And there's been many apologists for these individuals. Many people denied the Holocaust that went on in Russia. The New York Times took part in that. Nobody went to jail for doing that. Nobody went to jail for having this opinion. But people have gone to jail simply for saying things about issues which Jewish supremacists don't like. Israel could not get away with this terrorism, this murder, this assault, except for this power. And now we have Daniel Pipes admitting, basically, that the Jewish supremacists, that these Jewish neocons, want a civil war, which is totally against every stated American policy in Iraq, and certainly dangerous to the United States in many ways. But you know what? They want the terror. They want, I think that they wanted 9/11. I believe the Mossad knew in advance about 9/11. I believe they purposely didn't tell the people of the United States. I can, and that's not just what I'm saying here. I can quote from the Brit Hume report on Fox News Network, where the reporter, Cameron, is interviewing FBI people, and he says, the FBI says, quote, how could they not have known? How could these Israeli agents who were shadowing Mohammed Atta and the other hijackers of 9/11, how could they not have known about this entire attack plan? In fact, they shadowed them for weeks. They tapped their phones. They were living basically just feet from them in Hollywood, Florida. Five Israeli Mossad agents were arrested on a rooftop filming the attacks and cheering them as they went on. They even posed for pictures lighting their lighters. I think Israel knew about these attacks. And I believe very strongly that they want violent attacks. They want to propagate and promote them. That's why we have these Mohammed cartoons. If these people in the Denmark paper, if Mr. Fleming Rose, this Jewish Dane, if he really wanted, you know, to argue for freedom of speech, why didn't he print some of the cartoons against Israel? In fact, they said they were going to print some against Ariel Sharon and Israel, about Israel's tyranny, but they backed down at the last second. Why have they never printed any cartoons that question certain aspects of the absolutely incredibly hokey aspects of the Holocaust story? Because there are some aspects of it that are just that beg belief. Ladies and gentlemen, I just believe in my heart that these truths are so powerful. If we continue to speak them and we continue to work and spread them, we will change the consensus both in the United States and around the world. That's what this radio program is all about. I think this is an excellent show. I hope as this program ends in just a few minutes now, that you use your fingers on your computer keyboards and you go to chat rooms and you spread the word of this all over. And I hope that Stormfront's a great source. You know, there's many tens of thousands of members of Stormfront. It's the largest single pro-European American website in the world. You know, take this article that I've written, davidduke.com, and post it. Format it and post it in different places of Stormfront. And then, in turn, make sure that people get this article out. And this radio show. I think this radio show will not only enlighten a lot of people listening and give you arguments for your friends and family, but it will also be very powerful in terms of reaching your own neighbors and your own family. Yesterday's program is getting a tremendous response. I'm getting so many emails about it. If you haven't heard yesterday's program, which deals with the evangelicals and whether or not, and it, we talk a little bit about race in the beginning, but then I go in primarily into the evangelical problem and the fact that these Jewish supremacists have twisted now some of the Christian churches into supporting the very worst enemies of Christianity and the enemies of our country. very interesting article, and I hope that if you have friends or family who are devout Christians and you're having a difficult time reaching them and discussing the Jewish problem with them, if they start saying, well, yeah, they're the chosen people and the God has a covenant with them, then here you have an opportunity to really have a program which will help educate them and I think motivate them. If you can just get them to listen to that program that I did yesterday, it will be, you know, a tremendous step forward in terms of educating and helping your family, your loved ones, see what you see and hopefully bring them closer to believing what you believe. What we represent really is the truth here. I think it cannot be defeated in debate. If we have somebody halfway intelligent, just halfway intelligent, we can win every debate on this argument because we have the truth. What we say makes sense. That's why, as Fisk talks about, that they have to use pressure and censorship and all these underhanded, vile techniques to try to shut up our position. Well, that's about it. I look forward to being with you tomorrow. And in fact, I don't know. We have to see about tomorrow's show. We might have a change in time. But I will certainly be back with you soon, and I hope that you all will do your best and really spread the work of this program today to your friends and family, and you help understand, and you help yourself. I mean, study some of these ideas till you get these ideas backwards and forward. Read the source material. Don't just listen to my broadcast. Read the source material until you understand it so thoroughly that anyone you discuss this issue with, you can discuss it effectively and winningly. And the idea, ladies and gentlemen, too, and this is something I learned the hard way as a young boy many, many years ago, is that your task is not to defeat the person you're discussing these issues with. Your task is not to show your mother or your father or your friend or your brother or your aunt or your uncle or your teacher. Your task is not to show them that you're right and they're wrong. You are right, and they may well be wrong. But your task is simply to share with them information and ideas. And if you take it from that standpoint, if you take it from a standpoint of love for your brothers and sisters, and that you want to show them this material, and if you act polite with them, if you argue effectively, you can still use humor. And you can still use every sort of argument that you can. But if you do it with kindness, and you do it with fairness, and you basically say, look, I understand why you feel this way, but have you ever looked at this point and see this other question? Eventually, I tell you, if you continue to work, you'll bring them over. And we will save this world. We will save our people one person at a time. We can do it one person at a time. That's all it takes mathematically. But you have to get out there and do it. If you keep your mouth shut and you don't send those emails out, you don't go to the chat rooms and the forums across the internet, and you let these arguments and ideas go fallow and fall on deaf ears, you know, a tree that falls in the forest may not be heard by any human being, but it still falls. But if trees are falling from a disease or from a disaster, we must make sure that our people hear the fall, hear the coming tragedy. And that's what this program's about. It's about enlightening our people. We can't afford any more Americans dying in a crazy Jewish extremist neocon war in Iran. We can't afford that. We can't afford an escalation of terrorism around the world. And as this war escalates, ladies and gentlemen, this will give the Jewish extremists, these Jewish supremacists, the opportunity to even take away more of our rights and liberties. They'll be able to make the Patriot Act look like kindergarten compared to something closer to Orwell's 1984. We have an opportunity right now to reach a lot of people. We've got to reach people over the next few days, next few weeks, next few months. We've got to do it not because we have any hatred for Jews or any dislike of America. It's because we love America. It's because we love our people. Because we love fairness and decency. And it's because we don't want America, our country, to be harmed or anybody else to be harmed. We don't want tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of children around the world to suffer the loss of life or limb or sight. We don't want American soldiers to suffer that. And we want the interest of America to be pursued. The nation of Iran, at least, I believe, has a government that defends the interest of Iran. And sometimes the interest of Iran will not coincide with the interest of the United States of America. But right now, the people who are controlling the United States of America, and they control it through a very convoluted and money-driven and special interest money-driven political system, they do not make our foreign policy. And they do not control our media by what's good for this country. They're doing it for what's good for the Jewish extremist agenda. That's it, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll certainly be with you again tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.